Welcome to the Reckless Dice Podcast, a podcast for Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. This is Episode 0, and I'm your host, Paul Tobia, and with me tonight are Jesse Burke.
Hey.
And Jeremy Duvall.
Hey, guys.
Hey, and so this is the first episode that we've got here. You notice we've labeled it Episode 0, so really what we're doing is we're kind of kicking the tires, making sure that all this stuff works. So if you are listening to us, congratulations, it did work. So tonight, really what we're going to do is we're going to kind of introduce ourselves, talk a little bit about ourselves and how we got into Warhammer. So why don't you kick us off there, Jesse?
Sure. So I've been a big Warhammer fan for probably going on 15 years or so now. I originally got introduced to it with Jeremy back in middle school.
Yes.
And I remember building miniatures and trying to paint him and playing with him in the yard and having kids bully me and break him and me go cry in the corner. But I remember the fantasy roleplay specifically, though. I had heard about it a long time ago, and I didn't give it any credit for a long time, and it sounded to me kind of like just a cheap version of what I loved, which was the Warhammer miniatures. And then one day I actually saw it in the store, and I think this was probably either first edition or maybe second edition, and the artwork kind of just reinforced the fact that it looked cheesy on the cover of the rule book. I don't know if any of you guys remember that rule book, but it just looked awful, I thought.
I actually have the rule book in front of me right here, all right? So I have my hardback 1986 copyright first edition Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay right here, right there. That's what I'm tapping on.
I can hear it. So I didn't give it a lot of credit at the time, and really I stuck heavy into the tabletop gaming of it probably up until the last couple of years, where I kind of accidentally rediscovered second edition role play and started having a lot of fun with that. And then third edition, I was kind of in it from the beginning and have really enjoyed it since.
See, now that's actually different because I came into the role playing first. So this is Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay was actually the second role playing game that I ever played. I of course did Dungeons and Dragons, AD&D first edition back in middle school, just like you guys. But the first time I ever played Warhammer Fantasy was like a month after I'd first gotten into role playing, and it was like the sky lightened, birds were chirping, all that kind of stuff. It's like, wait a second, you're using percentile dice? It was like the metric system to the English system. What's this 18 crap, 3d6, all that? Screw that. Just roll 2d10, read off the percentage. Yeah. Did you make it? Did you not? And I just loved it.
Call of Cthulhu, Jeremy, the first time I played Call of Cthulhu, I think was with you at Gamescape that one day, that one summer. And that was my first introduction to the D100 percentile system. And prior to that, it had been D&D, like you said, with the D4s, the D6s, D20s, and everything. And I thought that system was just brilliant. And only later did I discover that whole kind of system actually was very, very popular throughout a whole bunch of different role-playing games. Since then, I've kind of learned a little bit more and that it's a lot more broad than that.
Well, with Cthulhu, it's good that you have 100-sided dice because that's 100 ways your brain can be melted. So,
see, but that was the other thing about fantasy too, is that it wasn't just elves and dwarves and crap like that. I mean, you had that whole overriding chaos thing on top of it.
Yeah.
So you had the mutation and the insanity and the disease and all that kind of stuff, which is really, I think, is great stuff that you can put in there. Versus, I'm worried about my hit points going down to zero.
Jarrett was interesting, him saying that, where Paul comes from the introduction of the role play and then exploring the fantasy tabletop game. So what I was thinking is that, Jeremy, you and I come from the tabletop aspect where we're playing with the models, and all of our games were heavily based on, moving a certain number of inches, rolling your D6s,
yes,
casting spells, and the lore that we learned was through the battle system, through the different armies. You're like, Empire, that's man. Skaven, those are the rat men. And you kind of I kind of think that our introduction to the Warhammer world was heavily influenced not from the Warhammer lore, but more from the tactics and the different unit types. You know, so like I could rattle off every kind of Empire soldier that exists, but you know, but Paul, on the other hand, probably comes into the Warhammer world from the lore and then kind of explores out from there. I feel like we're almost coming into the hobby from polar opposite sides.
Yeah, it definitely is pretty close to that. You know, and honestly, I have not been a diehard Warhammer fantasy roleplay fan forever. You know, I definitely fell off the wagon, got into a bunch of other stuff, video games, things like that. I mean, third edition is kind of what's dragged me back into RPG stuff. I mean, I did some Cyberpunk 2020 and some second edition and D&D and all that kind of stuff. But really, you know, last year when the big box came out, you know, it triggered me because I love Warhammer. I love the mythos. I love the lore and all that stuff. And then it was just this huge box sitting there saying, you know, look at all this stuff on the back of it. Look at all these things. Yeah. And that's really kind of what actually got me back into role playing, to be honest.
You know, Jeremy, I think you had even initially told me about third edition, and you were saying, hey, they got this demo copy down at the shop, come check it out. And you were saying, yeah, they've got these, like, all these cards and all these stand-ups, and they've got these crazy dice. And my first impression after having been playing second edition for a while and building some map tool stuff for it and running a couple campaigns was, you know, this system works. What are they doing? They're turning it into a cartoon. This is going to be insane. And you told me it's the presentation value is really great. And I'm like, well, that's super, but it sounds ridiculous.
Well, the thing with Fantasy Flight is Fantasy Flight has always done really high – the Blizzard of the board game world, you know, the very high production value stuff. Mm-hmm. So if I had seen another company do that, I probably would have been more skeptical. But just knowing the quality of their actual things that they created made me want to, you know, want to check it out. And I've always loved dice. I think every gamer when they're a little kid remember walking by the dice counter at your local game store and just wanting that, not knowing what you're going to do with the dice, but – you know, and I remember seeing all these new dice and, you know, just visually it looked pretty interesting to me.
Absolutely. I think the dice arguably are the best part of the entire system, even if you know, I love a lot of the other aspects too, but if you did away with everything and were just left with the dice, that is enough to carry the entire system.
Definitely gives you a lot of room to not only have randomized results, but through the actual results, it's not just like a pass or fail. You can then role play your result. You know, were you lucky? Were you successful? Did, you know, you trip on your toe and hit your head and then your axe went flying and then killed the guy you're trying to get? You know, I mean, the system is a lens to drama. And the more drama you can have in an RPG, a tabletop RPG, the more fun you're going to have, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it takes a lot of the guesswork out of – or the repetitiveness, especially from a GM, because that's where usually I'll end up, is that you know, I can only describe you smashing a goblin's face in so many different ways. And you guys get tired of hearing it after a while, and the dice allow you to really explore those weird who-knows-what and reasons of why – that goblin's face just got crushed in.
Do you get your players to actually kind of help you narrate with that stuff? I mean, do they see, you know, the way that the dice roll and start doing it themselves, start explaining that kind of stuff? Yeah.
I have. Yeah, I've noticed that the a lot of times it's the Chaos Stars is where people always seem to have the most fun, or it's usually the negative stuff, you know. It's the, you know, so-and-so swung his axe and left himself exposed for the next turn. That's kind of my default one if I can't think of something. But, you know, when, you know, somebody, like, you know, trips and falls, slips in the mud, goes blind for the turn, gets dust in his eyes or, you know, whatever. There's a thousand things you can think of. But when the players start interacting or dropping suggestions, it gives a common pool for people to start throwing ideas in there, and the GM can just really just pick whatever they want.
Yeah, it's been interesting because I've got a local game that I've got here with a couple of friends and my wife that we play on and off, try to get, you know, a monthly thing going. But they're actually not very experienced with role-playing games. So the dice are very helpful once they got it in their minds. You know, the swords cancels hammers, skulls cancels eagles, all that kind of stuff. Once they got that in their mind of how the mechanics of that worked, they picked it up very quickly, and it doesn't require math. I mean, it requires, okay, I've got three swords and two hammers, so I fail at it. But, it's very quick and easy that they can figure out that, yes, I failed, yes, I succeeded, but there's these modifiers and all that stuff versus, okay, here's your Thaco, here's your armor class, here's your, mm-hmm. you know, here's mm-hmm. the, all right, yeah. you get a +5 to hit, roll these dice and add this to it, and if you get a 6 or better, you know, all that kind of stuff can get pretty complicated.
Go ahead, Jer.
I just said, I think game mechanics and statistical analysis and all that stuff that's inherently a part of role-playing games can be a real hindrance to, like, new players.
Absolutely.
Because they get nervous and they're trying to figure out what they do. And part of the joy of doing tabletop role-playing game is that you can act and you can ham it up and you can live. You can make the game whatever you want. And I think that really begins to happen with players who are comfortable with the nuts and bolts of the system. And then can feel free that they're not being hamstrung by that and can really then get into their character, get into the role play aspect of it.
And by having the cards on the table, right, that's the way that they can do that quickly. They're not looking it up in a book. They don't have to memorize it, all that kind of stuff. So they've got the action card in front of them, or they've got the talent card in front of them, and it gives them the mechanics. It lets them know what they can do right there without having to say, oh, wait a second, I got to pull out player's guide, page 43, table 2, mm-hmm. you know, all that kind of stuff.
I've found that the to that point, that the dice system has – almost eliminated the need, or I guess maybe even, if I'll back up a second, the higher level approach to the game, and combined with the way the dice work, has allowed for, as a GM or even a player, to keep the game extremely fluid. Like you said, I've almost never had to go back into a book and look something up outside of character creation for any of the games I've run, because it really just comes down to how many dice am I going to throw into this pool. Am I going to make it harder? Am I going to make it a little bit easier? And there is no hard and fast rule that says in this circumstance you have to do this specifically. They give you some nice suggestions, but nothing's going to break the game if you have one extra purple dice in the roll.
They specifically wrote that into the rule books like that. They're specifically vague about saying, well, you add a couple white dice if it's good, you add a couple black dice if it's bad.
Now, how much quicker and more fluid is the game with that, where you actually get to concentrate on your story and your role playing, you get way more accomplished. You don't spend an hour doing one combat with four goblins. I mean, you actually can play through an entire story arc in one session. I have only once tried to go back and play another system. I think it was Rogue Trader. That's Warhammer 40K, but it's which I love. But I had a lot of trouble with the system because it wasn't. I was really enjoying it. I was actually really attached onto the way that they built third edition.
And I think one of the cardinal aspects, and they say a lot in the tabletop Warhammer, is the here's the rules, follow the rules, but don't be a slave. Don't be a slave to the rules. You know, have a rule set down. But if you need to come up with a house rule or modify something or whatever, and I think that how they have the dice system inherently set up is that it really, you know, it really allows that on the fly to keep the game moving.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, going back to what you talked about with Rogue Trader and the Dark Heresy and the Death Watch that came out, you know, that's all Fantasy Flight stuff too. And those are kind of the old school RPGs. I mean, they're very close to second edition Warhammer Fantasy as well.
Especially Dark Heresy. Dark Heresy is essentially a mirror image of Warhammer Second Edition, with a few swap outs here and there. And I think arguably it's a little more popular.
Yep.
So they may have a few extra supplements and things like that, but I mean, it almost verbatim is the same game.
And I own the books. I haven't picked up Death Watch yet, but I've never had the opportunity to play it. But it looks like a great system. I mean, especially Rogue Trader, I think, in terms of the scope of being able to explore 40K and stuff like that. I think with Dark Heresy, with the Inquisitors, and even with Death Watch, with the Space Marines, you know, you kind of get pigeonholed into what you need to do. And I'm sure they've got stuff in the books that blows it out from that. But I just kind of think, you know, there's definitely the retro movement and the old school movement that's out there. You know, Pathfinder, not fourth edition. You know, second edition Warhammer, not third edition, stuff like that. And I'm just not buying it. You know, I don't mind fourth edition. I like third edition of Warhammer Fantasy.
How do you feel to that point? You know, okay, so you and I, you played second edition, or haven't you?
I have, yeah. It's been a while ago, but
so second edition has been around for ages now. They've got books coming out the wazoo. It's a complete set. So people who want to play second edition have everything available to them right now if they own it. People who are playing third edition are still largely crippled content-wise, outside of making the stuff up on their own. But I mean, as far as Fantasy Flight supplying them with tokens and with sanctioned adventures and things like that, we don't have it all yet. We're still waiting for the content to fill out. We don't have all four Chaos Gods yet. We've only got two of them. You know, so if I wanted to go fight the Keeper of Secrets or a Bloodthirster, I don't have the proper tools to do it. And of course, I can. You know, we can role play it out and go print one off the web or something. But for those who really like to hold on to the official product and roll with that, we don't have everything. So I'm really not surprised a lot of people are still clinging on to their complete sets that they've invested literally hundreds of dollars into and have been playing for years.
But you know, the haters that come out around that and then they bring that up is that, you know, I hate third edition and it's not a complete set. You know, that's like saying the food is horrible and the portions are too small. you know, pick one or pick the other. All right, you don't like third edition, great, you don't like third edition, or you don't like that there isn't enough stuff out for it yet and there aren't enough advanced careers yet or things like that. You know, but if you're saying them both, it's like a little bit of cake and eating it too, in my mind.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. Jared, what do you think?
Well, I think gamers have a very interesting paradox in that they both hate change and also love new things. So I think that you get a little bit of both of it. You become used to the game that you've always played. It's your game. You love it. All other games stink, yet you love new technology. You love new things. You love new stuff that's coming out. So I think in a lot of ways you'll probably get that sort of illogical thing like you said. Like, this game blows, now why won't they make more stuff for it? You know, it doesn't make any sense. But, I mean, I think it just fits into that sort of that ideology of being both used to what you know, but also curious about, you know, about the future. And I bet you a lot of those people who discount it are often people who haven't even looked at it. But it's like the hip thing to do is to make fun of new things that are popular and made by flashy companies.
How hard is it to sit there and look at your second edition collection, which could arguably be a stack of books a foot and a half tall, and you sit there and go, God, that's $600 worth of books right there that are out of print now.
And I've had a campaign going on for the last 3 years, and I get together with my guys every weekend and we sit down, you know, and we've done this for the last 3 years, week in, week out. How dare they discontinue this and start this other thing? I totally understand that. I mean, there can definitely be a lot of sour grapes around, you know, people who feel like they've had the rug pulled out from under them.
I think one thing that a lot of people who are still clinging to second edition need to make that transition into third is a simple, easy way or some set of rules that they can apply to their second edition adventures to make it work in third edition. You know, some kind of conversion methodology there. And I see that the forums are begging for it. Yeah, some people have gone through and done a couple small adventures. I've seen some people do the have been working real hard on the Thousand Thrones campaign. I think they're on like chapter 5 or so now, and that's a huge campaign. But you know, people want it, And that's going to be the easiest avenue for people who are stuck in second edition to make it across.
And I think you see an interesting parallel when it comes to console gaming. You know, it's the big debate about, you know, do you make new consoles backward compatible with games from the older console?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see it makes sense, one, to not do that financially, because then the people have to buy the game, you know, the PS1 port off the PlayStation network of your favorite game that you want to play on your PS3, but you have the PS1 game on your shelf, but
yeah,
you can't do it. So I understand, you know, financially why they would do it, but, I mean, ideally it would be great if there was, like you said, some sort of system, you know, that you can kind of drag and drop older modules into and have them be converted to third edition. I just think that that's probably going to be a community-driven creation.
Well, Jerry, you remember the game that you and I had done at KublaCon recently, where we did the we ended up doing a couple day session and did the last chapter of the Thousand Thrones campaign as a standalone adventure, which is the Witch's Womb, just a pretty much your standard dungeon crawl,
yeah,
in the Warhammer universe. And I didn't upconvert that at all, really, prior to running it. I ran it straight from the second edition book,
mm-hmm,
and really a testament to the flexibility of third edition is that I could almost just on the fly make those conversions right into third edition and run with it, and we didn't really have a hiccup the entire time.
No, not at all.
It was actually quite easy. The statistics, you know, you kind of take every value, divide it by 10, and that's how many dice you roll. You know, you're going to get really darn close if you need something quick and dirty to a third edition version of a second edition adventure.
Okay, I'm glad you explained yourself, because I thought you were just bragging how great a GM you were that you were able to convert it on the fly at the con with all the, you know,
yeah,
everybody
you know
else.
Yeah. No, I'm the last person to say I'm a fantastic GM, but I was really, really pleased for the system on how easily adaptable it was. And, you know, I think that's going to be one of the best parts. I think even for a new GM, I think that this whole third edition is great for new GMs, but it's also great, like you said, for people who are not traditional hardcore role players who just feed on the statistics and the dice and adding numbers and dividing and doing equations. The people who want this visual aspect to understand the game, it works great for new GMs and for new players. I've taught a couple new people how to play with this system who had never role played before, and
yeah,
even halfway through the first game, they were rocking it out and having a great time.
And I got to say, it's helpful from a GM standpoint. I mean, historically, I've been a player for a very long time, and I'm a GM for my group, and that's most of what I've been doing, mainly because I own all the books and everything. But from that perspective, I don't have a whole lot of time to put this stuff together. You know, I've got,
yeah,
a brand new kid, I got a job, I'm on the high side of my 30s, so, you know, I'm not in there, you know, building all this stuff. So I'm having a great time just running through all the things that they're providing in third edition.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I've got the second edition and the first edition stuff. I'd love to run my guys through Enemy Within after we get done with Stromdorf and Edge of Night and things like that. You know, I think that would be an awesome thing to pull them in, you know, now that they've got some things under their belt, maybe they're second rank, second and a half rank, you know, just jump into the Enemy Within and start blowing everything up.
Yeah, I've always wanted to do Enemy Within. I was listening to the some guys had done a recorded sessions of that, and they've got like 20 or 25 sessions of that recorded. And I've listened through several of those and had a fun time with that.
Yeah, we need to. I know exactly who you're talking about, and I heard some of those. We'll put a link in the show notes for those guys. I can't remember their name either, but we'll look it up after we record and make sure that it's on the show notes.
And to that effect, actually, we'd been discussing adding our some of our game sessions as a kind of supplementary material to this podcast.
Yeah, that's a, you know, what we want to do. So what we've been doing tonight is just kind of just kind of talking about, you know, our experiences with Warhammer Fantasy. But really, you know, starting in probably a week or two, we're going to get on a regular schedule. We're going to be doing this every other week. We're going to be sitting down for an hour. We're going to have a topic. Next episode, we're going to talk about the latest thing that's hit, the Guides and Vaults, you know, what people are talking about, the 1.5 or the new edition of Warhammer Fantasy that came out towards the end of 2010. So we're going to spend about an hour talking about that. And really kind of every other week moving on from that and having an hour's worth of Warhammer Fantasy talk every other week. So
can't wait.
Yep.
And I just think as a side note to what you said about, I think podcasts and the internet in general has been, a lot of people talk about it's a technology that's moving forward and taking people away from maybe some of these antiquated game formats, but I think it's done a great service to role-playing games, because not only do you have a internet that can lead you to maps, one whose site I think we will mention at some point, who has lots of great Warhammer Fantasy maps.
No, we're talking. We never even finished our introductions. We like derailed after one.
Yeah, but just to finish what I was saying, I think it's not only can you listen to podcasts talk like ours talking about game mechanics, products, stuff like that, but you can listen to these podcasts of actual game sessions, which I think if for people who are wanting to GM or have questions on, because I mean that's the hardest thing to do in role playing is to be the game master. You can listen to these people who have such great experience, and you can pick up just like tips or their style, how they talk, or different, you know,
absolutely,
all sorts of different information that there wouldn't be no way that you could have learned that in the pre-internet era. You would just have to RPG and basically just kind of come up with your own stuff. So I think
you were stuck reading the book and where they tell you how to be a good GM, and that only gets you 2 feet.
You have entered the hall. The hall is dark and scary. There are goblins. What do you do?
Absolutely. You know, there's a group who does that. I think their site is RPG MP3, and they've done, God, like literally, I think hundreds of them, and they've got some fantastic GMs on there who I've learned tons from. How to approach encounters, how to interpret dice rolls, ways to just kind of explain that data to your players in a way that is not, oh, you rolled a six. It's, you know, how do you convey metadata? You know, it really, if anybody hasn't listened to at least one good session, I highly, highly, highly recommend it.
And hopefully, you know, as we get into things and we continue on, you know, we're gonna be talking about touching on some of that stuff in our podcast as well, specifically around you know, Warhammer 3rd Edition. But, you know, good GM tips, stuff like that, questions from the outside, all that sort of stuff. You know, the sky's the limit. It's still a relatively new system. It's well supported. There's things coming out for it all the time. So I think we're going to have a lot of good things to talk about in the upcoming episodes.
Mm-hmm. So Jeremy, didn't give you guys a chance to introduce yourselves. Jared, tell us kind of how you got started in Warhammer.
Well, I was always really into sci-fi and fantasy. I had an older brother who basically would pick on me all the time until he wanted to play Warhammer, and then I would be his best friend because, you know, his only other option was to try to get our mom to play Warhammer with him, and she was a great mom, but I think she left, you know, only so much a parent can do, but... So we used to play Warhammer all the time, and he would absolutely destroy me, and I just thought it was the miniatures and the pictures, and I just thought it was just so cool. And I remember one of my first early experiences with Warhammer Fantasy was I was a rabid White Dwarf reader, which was basically Games Workshop's kind of hobby magazine, and I'd get them every new month. I'd get them, and I remember I was looking at an article on a War Dancer, and I was like, had some cool pictures, and I was looking at the stat bar, and I was like, this is wrong. Like, what? These numbers don't make any sense. And it was because it was a War Dancer statistics from early first edition Warhammer Fantasy roleplay in the White Dwarf. And I was like, there's a role-playing game for
there's
this?
There's too many zeros in this stat bar.
Exactly. I was like, why is the ballistic skill so big? And it just... It didn't make any sense.
I don't have enough dice for that.
Exactly. And that's kind of like was my very, very early first impression with Warhammer Fantasy. And then, I mean, one of my favorite aspects of Warhammer Fantasy, the tabletop battle game, is the early edition army books were really huge. They were thick. They had chapter upon chapter of lore. And that's what I would spend reading, like, at Friday night late, you know, when there's no school. I'd stay up late and look in my army book, and I would read the history of all the races. So that's kind of what helped propel me into wanting to check out the role play aspect, is that was one of my favorite parts of the army books, was the lore.
So did you guys do any general RPG before getting into Warhammer Fantasy RPG, or was it straight
from... I was just about to ask you, Jer, when was the first time you actually played Warhammer Fantasy roleplay? Because if it's anything like me, that was long after playing a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
I think
no,
yours
it was
the same story.
Definitely. I mean, I think I first started with, I did a lot of Palladium stuff, the Palladium system, because they had the Robotech franchise.
That's right. You got me into role-playing. Robotech was the first role-playing game I ever played.
And I was a huge Robotech nut, and they had a bunch of really awesome – the Robotech original Palladium line of RPG books were really good, like just source-wise were awesome. And that was my first first experience with role-playing, and then we kind of did more of the fantasy battles, and then when I was – at the end of high school, I was working at a game store, and then – Jesse and I, we would do 7C, which was a great RPG.
I got into 7C. Yeah, actually, I sold off all my old 7C stuff in the last garage sale.
I just came across my books the other day. That game will always have a little soft spot in my heart because there's something special about the way they did that system.
Well, and I think that Warhammer Fantasy 3rd Edition, with how they do their dice rolls, reminds me a little bit of the 7C system and the fact that you can really role play your roles and you can add luck. You can add luck, you can add misfortune, you can add these elements that add drama so that you're not just rolling, okay, I need a 19 to hit you or whatever.
Yeah.
They even called that, didn't it? Didn't you roll the drama die? Wasn't that a mechanic of the game? Yeah.
One of the best mechanics that I loved about 7C was that they actually gave you experience points for doing something that made the whole table laugh or that was, you know, really just exceptional witty banter. You know, the DM could award you experience points to advance your character, which made you want to do those Indiana Jones moments.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it was the closest thing to James Bond or, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean or Indiana Jones that you could come up with to where it actually made sense in the scope of the game.
You know? Yeah, you know, it made sense to, instead of attacking a guy, you're like, I'm going to jump on the chandelier, stab the dude, land, kiss the girl, drink my drink, and then, you know.
Then say something witty, yeah.
Yeah, say something witty. And then the mechanics of how that dice rolling system was is that those feats were hard, but they were possible to do.
Mm-hmm. And it encouraged you to do it. And if you messed it up, all the better, because then it became a comic relief.
Exactly. Then it was funny when you fall on your face and, you know, everyone laughs at you. So
it gives the villain an excuse to say something mean to you. And yeah, no, that was a great system. And Call of Cthulhu was the other system that I really enjoyed prior to – I think D&D was probably the one I enjoyed the least. But Call of Cthulhu and 7Cs were the ones that were kind of the high points prior to entering into Warhammer roleplay.
Same with me. I mean, I had played D&D, and I understand its place as the historical godfather of role-playing games. But quite honestly, it was the one that I played it, but it's been the least interesting to me out of all the RPGs that I've had, you know, the experience playing.
Yeah, I've read some of their books, which have been really good. I enjoy the adventures, but I think just the mechanics of the games it's so combat focused that the mechanics of the games become very dry, and you actually lose the role playing elements of it.
I want my RPGs to be like miniature optional and not be like if I don't have, you know, the combat so intense that unless I know exactly where my guy is and how far your guy's from my guy, then it becomes like, well, why don't I just play a miniatures game if this is what it's going to be?
And we have that. You know? We have Warhammer Tabletop for that.
Exactly.
And that's a robust full system built for that.
Or even better, you've got the smaller games like Mordheim and Necromunda. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are almost RPGs right there.
They are. Yeah, Mordheim probably bridged the gap between role play and traditional tabletop Warhammer the most. You know, with your kind of ongoing warband, building experience points. That game, anybody who's played it, I don't think you'll find one person who says a bad thing about it.
And I would think that if you could find a copy of that, that would be a great transition from someone who likes Warhammer fantasy roleplay and is maybe interested in getting into miniature.
God, isn't the rulebook free now? Can't you get the rulebook for free off the web? Like, legally, I think they have it.
I
think on the Fanatic Games. I might be wrong.
At one point, we'll check into that.
Checking out. Yeah, because it is a great, it combines great elements of both aspects of gaming, of miniature gaming and of, you know, of role play.
Cool. And Paul, tell us about your history.
Oh, well, Warhammer was actually, it was the second role-playing game I ever played back in middle school. So we started out with a group of friends and we played some D&D and we did a couple sessions of that. And then Warhammer came around. He said, "Hey, I want to switch up systems on you." And I didn't know anything about, you know, it was like D&D was role-playing, you know. So he said, "Well, let's try this out." And it was a revelation for me because, you know, getting your mind around the 3D6, the 3D18, the Thaco, all that kind of stuff, moving to the percentile dice, moving to the 2D10 was just, it was like, you know, you were living in the English system and all of a sudden somebody showed you what the metric system was about. And it was just like, okay, this makes sense. Yeah. You know, I can make that translation a lot easier.
I'm curious for you, how was your introduction to the Warhammer lore? You know, like, kind of how did that come about, or how did you feel coming into not just these are orcs, they're bad; these are goblins, they're bad; these are humans, they're good; dwarf, mine. I mean, what was your experience going into Warhammer? Because they do have a very specific style for the Warhammer lore and all of their characters and creatures, and the kind of the general atmosphere that they portray that is not the same as every other fantasy game.
Well, back then, I mean, you got to. I mean, we're in middle school, right? I mean, this is not high level, kind of stuff. So everything that I got out of it was when I shelled out the money and bought the book for myself and started reading it and you know, getting the background from that because I wasn't getting it in the game. You know, no fault to the 14-year-old DM from back in the day or anything like that. But, you know, it was really once I picked up the book and it figured out, you know, why does the tattooed dwarf have an orange mohawk on the cover? You know, things like that. That's when I really got into it. That's when I really got into the Warhammer side of things. And then actually later on, through high school and college is when I learned more about the wargaming side of things, started with 40K and a little bit of fantasy. It definitely runs in my family. My brother is really big into the miniature side of things, but never really took with me for that much. But I've always been very, very interested in the lore and the background of it. I mean, that to me is the big difference between D&D and Warhammer. No matter what mechanics you put on it, whether you're talking second edition D&D or fourth edition, or first edition Warhammer or third edition, it's the lore behind it. You know, D&D, you've got all these different settings, but your base settings of Forgotten Realms and stuff like that, stand those up against what happens in Warhammer and what happens on the fantasy side. And it can't be beat. I mean,
yeah, I know that the D&D realms all have a history and gods and all these things that kind of help you establish the world to play in. But I don't know them well enough to compare them to Warhammer. Now, I certainly favor Warhammer, but do they compare, or is Warhammer really just that much more refined?
Well, from my perspective, I mean, D&D is the definition of generic fantasy. I mean, it's the flip side of the coin of being the 800-pound gorilla in the room, is that elves are elves because ever since Gary Gygax and back in the day, you know, he said this is how elves are going to act, this is how orcs are going to act. Warhammer comes along and says, no, let's turn them into soccer hooligans. You know, let's have elves, you know, save the world from this overarching chaos idea that's coming down. You know, that kind of stuff just doesn't exist in the standard set, but the standard set for and then of course, you know, you have the spin-offs like Dark Sun and stuff, which is a pretty cool post-apocalyptic thing mm-hmm. that you run through D&D, which is, you know, metal is rare and it's all sand and insects and stuff like that, which is all pretty cool. But you know, just in terms of measuring fantasy setting versus fantasy setting, Warhammer's just got that extra color and extra ideas and history and lore to it, and then the overarching threat of chaos that just, yeah, in my mind, puts it above and beyond any generic fantasy setting.
I think the part that really sticks with me, or the reason why the Warhammer lore really resonates, is that it has so many real-world tie-ins to either geographical or political or cultural references that you can easily relate to and understand. Even if you don't know anything about the orcs, you know, you kind of reference the soccer hooligans, you already, just by saying that, you know the atmosphere of how the orcs are going to operate. You look at their models, and you know how this culture works. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the world map, and you go, oh, okay, well, you know, like this nation here, you know, Estalia is this, Tilia is that, the old world is this, and you kind of, you can picture what it looks like, how the people act, and just by going back into your, like, you know, medieval and Renaissance, you know, mental imagery, you can piece the world together pretty well and have a reasonable grasp on it, even before going into all the hardcore content of the lore.
Well, I think that's the great aspect of good fantasy and good sci-fi, is where it takes the familiar and then turns it upside down. And I think in Warhammer, you have that. You have things that are familiar. Like, you have, you know, the Bretonians, which are kind of like your medieval French guys. You have mm-hmm. the Empire, which is your Prussians. You know, you have these archetypes, which we know from our own history. But then it goes through this awesome, dark, fantasy, twisted, teeth-filled chaos blender. And then you get this world that is so rich and almost, you know, like if you were to look through our own history through a magical mirror – you know, you might get something that looks like the Warhammer world. And I know that for me as a lover of history, I love that I can read about this rich fantasy world and pick out all of the different cultures and types of armor or societal things that were, you know, represented in our own history.
Mm-hmm. So you said something in there which is kind of the Warhammer tagline, the Warhammer Fantasy tagline, which is the dark fantasy or the dark and gritty fantasy.
Grim and perilous
think?
World of adventure.
There you go. Yeah. So what is that to you guys versus, you know, let's say D&D or any other role playing game? What makes Warhammer special?
I think that you've got the enemy within and the enemy without, right? You've got the chaos hordes up to the north that are an omnipresent threat, but then you've got the cultists and things like the Skaven and stuff like that that's on the inside. So it's not just bad in terms of they're going to be coming, this big army is going to be coming over the mountain, but it's also bad because the Burgermeister who's running the town is secretly a cultist of Tzeentch or something like that too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's peril beyond losing all your hit points. There's insanity, there's mutation, there's disease, critical hits, you know, it's, you know,
you're losing legs and arms is not a big deal. That's meant to be part of the game.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. One of the,
especially
things,
in second edition, not so much third yet, but,
one of the things that I've been reading on I think it's RPG.net, one of the Warhammer 3rd edition things there, that, or I think it's on the official forums, people are talking about, well, aren't there any disadvantages? Why aren't there any disadvantages to my character? And I'm thinking in the back of,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm thinking in the back of my head, well, how many sessions have you played? And, you know, because you're going to wind up with a critical hit or an insanity or a disease or a mutation, or, you know, there's your disadvantages right there.
It's funny because that was one of the most attractive elements. When I say Cthulhu, what's the first thing you guys think of?
Insanity.
Your guy goes nuts.
Yeah.
It's what horrible things will happen to the guy I care about. And that puts real threat into your character, not, oh, I lost a couple hit points and my cleric's going to heal it to me. I lost my arm. You know, I'm insane now. I'm a pyromaniac for the rest of my character's life.
You know, there's worse things than death. You know, your character all of a sudden grows 6 inches because you're deformed.
God, what were some of the poor mutations that your poor guys went through before?
Yeah,
dying?
You know, and I think that sense of peril, and also the fact, you know, that there's nothing. I mean, you can have bad guys and evil, you know, but I mean, in the Warhammer world, evil is like true evil. Like, I've never read about things so evil as the Chaos Gods, and it's just. I remember one of the things that drew me to the world is reading early, like, snippets about what can happen to you, or if you become a, you know, a slave to Slaanesh or whatever, and you read these horrible stories, you know, about your, you know, all these mutations that happen to you. And I remember being like, wow, this is really horrible, and I absolutely love it.
Some of the best writing, you're right, some of the best short stories or quick reads is reading how people begin getting corrupted by any of the Chaos Gods and the steps they go through towards actually becoming corrupted and then maybe even into a demon or worse. That those transitional stories are brilliant on all the Chaos Gods.
And like you said, you have like the enemy within, the enemy without. I think that's a really good way to phrase it, because in the Warhammer world, you have your surface enemies. Like, you have Skaven, or you have Chaos Warriors, or you have Orcs and Goblins, things that you fight with your hands, or with your weapons, or with your spells. But then there's the evil underneath the surface, like these dark gods who at any moment, you hope to God they don't, like, look on you and take interest in what you do. Because, you know, you'd hope then that the worst that what happened to you was that you would die. So I think that there's all these levels of, you know, horror around every corner. And to me, that sense of peril is really exciting.
Mm-hmm. There's one element that we haven't really talked about in why I think Warhammer kind of fits in. I kind of picture the Warhammer grim and perilous universe that they have is almost a mix between D&D and Cthulhu, in that, you know, it's a fantasy game, but it's a fantasy game where it's not afraid to kill you.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is that it's not afraid to make you insane. It's not afraid to cripple your character. It's not afraid to leave you dead, bloodied, and covered in mud on the side of the road dead. You know, it's a game that encourages that. You're nobody special. You're just a dude. You're just as powerful as that guy next to you. And if you're not careful, you're going to die. And that ability to actually feel in danger when you're in combat is a very, very powerful role-playing mechanic that I think a lot of games don't have. A lot of games protect you too much.
But I think conversely from that is that, you know, at the end of the day, you're there for the entertainment, and you want to make sure that your players are being heroes. And I think
that's up to the GM and the players to encourage that, but give you at least the illusion of being in legitimate danger.
But I think mechanically, I think third edition, that is one of the changes between third edition and second edition. I mean, in second edition, you're starting out character. I mean, you are dirt. I mean, you are just a baseline guy. But even in third edition, even a starting character still has some cool abilities.
You're right.
Has a decent chance of hitting people and doing damage and things like that. So I think that is a mechanically, it's not that it makes it any less perilous or grim, because you've got things like stress and fatigue and insanities and disease and mutation and corruption and all that kind of stuff that's above and beyond whether or not your toughness is a 3 or a 4. But
I think they kind of tried to toot the fact that you were a starting character in third edition is meant to be a slightly above average person.
Yeah, I think there's a reason that you took on the mantle of being a hero.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
unless
so
you're a rat catcher.
Well, or a grave robber, right? My guy in the map tool game.
Which is small, vicious dog.
in the map tool game that we're playing, you know, my guy's a grave robber, but he's the way that I'm playing him is that, you know, he saw one too many bad things and said, well, wait a second, I've been on the wrong side of this. I got to do something about it. You know, mm-hmm. that's kind of the start of his heroic journey.
Well, that's one of the best things I love about the Warhammer RPG is what you said, is that the career system is so in-depth that you can really play, you know, whatever type of character you want. You're not so much hammered into being, well, I'm a warrior, I'm a wizard, or whatever. I think in the last game I played with Jesse, my guy was a professional gambler, you know, and it just really leads you to this really such a rich tapestry to pull out which type of character you want to play.
You know, you're right. There are not a lot of role-playing games that offer pick a profession. It's like, here, you are a fighter archetype, you are a wizard archetype, and you kind of fall into one of three or four buckets. But here it's like, dude, if I want to be an innkeeper, I'm an innkeeper, and that's my character. I can still go fight. I can still do silly things, but I mean, it provides a predefined benchmark for your character's history.
Yeah, profession and class are two really different terms. You might have a lot of different professions that are all fighters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the profession adds that extra level of background that you can build your character around and find a way to fit into the mythos of the world that you're exploring. And that was one of the first things I looked at third edition was I looked through all the character, the career cards.
I remember you told me that. We were on the phone and you're like, dude, these are amazing. These are like full color. I'm like, I was sitting in my head going, how in the world, this thing must be a fortune that everything is on the hardboard, everything's color printed, the rule book's full color. I'm used to role-playing games being really kind of on a budget, you know, where you have your hardback book, your paperback books, and then black and white the whole way through.
Well, that's one of, you know, when we talk about, like I talked about earlier, I think that's one of the staples of Fantasy Flight is that, you know, you get what you pay for, and often things are, I mean, their production values are just so high. I mean, they can give you things at a pretty good value, and I've never bought a product from them that wasn't beautiful to look at. You know, it may not have been a game that I really, you know, stayed into for a long time, but the quality of the material is always very high.
Now, I have to say, this is my first Fantasy Flight game, and I'm amazed by the quality of the content, the production quality. I think I have my complaints here and there about other stuff, but I mean the production quality, the print quality, the box that it comes in is awesome.
Yeah, and I think then it makes sense why in an industry where, you know, a lot of companies are, you know, new companies come and fail and blah blah blah, Fantasy Flight is a growing company, you know, and it makes sense when you look at the quality of their stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense, yeah.
And that they're willing to diversify, that they're willing to, you know, they're not just an RPG. You know, they'll do the hardcore RPG stuff with, like, the 40K line that we were talking about there. But they do the board games, too. They do the in-between games, like Descent and stuff like that, too. So they're broad in the hobby. But being able to take that stuff, being able to take like the Warhammer Invasion, the CCG game that they do for Warhammer, and take the art from all of those cards and put it into the third edition. So you got art coming out the wazoo. I mean, and it's some good stuff that you've got there too. And the ability for them to do the card stock and the chits and the counters and the boards and do it well with some high quality stuff. You know, I don't see a whole lot of other RPG publishers being able to do that.
Yeah. And usually, you know, Games Workshop is pretty stingy with their license as far as letting other publishers do anything with any of their stuff. So
yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That also speaks to the quality that they're willing to, you know, give their license to Fantasy Flight to develop, like you said, the role-playing game, the card game. They have a card game that just came out that's based kind of on the old Space Hulk board game, which is just awesome.
Cool.
Which is, I played the other last week for the first time with some of my friends from work, and it's
called
fantastic.
Death Angel, isn't it?
Death Angel. Yeah, it's really it's basically like if you played the old Space Hulk board game or video game, that's exactly what it is. It's a card game, but it runs, it feels, it's just like that.
That's cool, man. I've always loved that game. I'll have to check that out.
Definitely, you definitely should.
All right, so let's wrap it up for this episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We definitely welcome any comments and feedback. You can reach us with comments on the site, so you can get the podcast and talk to us directly with comments at recklessdice, all one word, .rorschach.net. That's the home of the podcast that we'll have there, and we'll be putting up some posts and more podcasts in the upcoming weeks from there. You can also email us at recklessdice, again, that's all one word, @gmail.com. And you can also follow us on Twitter within @recklessdice again. So thanks, guys. Thanks, Jesse. And thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Yeah, sweet.
And
game on, you guys.
Yeah, we'll be back in a week or two. All right. Thanks, everyone.